I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Dan Hoffman. Dan is an entrepreneur who failed twice, succeeded once, and is starting again from the beginning. From 2000 to 2014, he built and then sold M5 Networks, a pioneering voice over IP cloud communications company serving businesses. After losing a battle to be CEO of the public Silicon Valley company that acquired M5, Dan retreated with his family to Barcelona for 2 years. During this time, he was chosen as a Henry Crown Fellow of the Aspen Institute, a program that pushed him to work on the opportunity to improve education and learning. He recently returned to Brooklyn, New York, and a few months ago started Circles Learning Labs with a mission to connect the world deeply so people can learn and grow together. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, David. Excited to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you on, and I'm great that we've connected and had an opportunity also to meet in person. And I wondered if we could start off by talking a little bit about your experiences that I alluded to in the introduction as an entrepreneur and why that led you to launch Circles Learning Labs.
Well, I had a chance to think and to reflect before taking on the next chapter. And so I was trying to be introspective and decide what were the parts of the day, very literally, parts of my job that gave me energy that I really wanted to keep, and also the things I didn't want to do. And one theme that just kept coming back to me, was learning. It was part of my own journey to become a CEO and to scale my company. I really felt like we grew the business as quickly as we sort of grew as leaders of the business. And also, it was one of the thorniest problems as I tried to build a culture. You know, how do you build a culture of learning? And so one of the first decisions I made when thinking about what to do next was to zero in and focus on making a contribution to the system of education and learning in the world.
And talk to me about what you think might be needed in the system of education and learning.
Yeah, so one of the first insights, and there's just so much old wisdom and so much new thinking mushed together that could be applied to not only schools, but training rooms and corporate learning, continuous learning for us as adults. And one of the first things you notice is so much of the systems we've set up are about being trained instead of learning. And I don't know anyone that sort of rose through the ranks at M5 because they showed up at training on time. You know, certainly with so much information out there in the world, with the content being freed, if you will, the challenge is how do we become self-directed learners? And so I started to look around and think, gosh, where are the structures that get more of that? How do you build self-directed learners and support self-directed learning and make it easier and reward it? Because those are the people at work that, you know, became the rising stars. They're the ones that went for it, not the ones that were handed the opportunity. So that's probably the biggest theme that I was thinking about.
And how do you define self-directed learning?
Well, the energy comes from the learner. So, you know, one of the problems we have as in adult learning in particular is that you've got so many problems you're dealing with all at once, right? And if you were to sign up for a course with a fixed curriculum, they may not necessarily match to the problem you're trying to solve, and it may not necessarily match at the beginning or the middle or the end in a way that really keeps you engaged and connects your learning to the things you're building, the concerns you have. So how do we get good at defining our problems? How do we get good at recognizing them and then getting help and figuring out how to learn? I think if I were to add one course to the curriculum, I've got little kids, but this goes all the way up through, you know, adult training, it would be learning how to learn, you know. And I think a self-directed learner's got a little bit of skill with ideas like repetition and practice, spaced repetition, how to go deep to get underneath the questions that we're trying to learn, how to use mental frameworks and make them part of your skill set, not just appreciate them passively. It's really hard to know when we're learning too, you know, so we have to realize how to assess learning. You know, it's all too often that we confuse passively understanding something with actively being able to do it. You sit in a conference or a speech or read a book and it all makes sense. You think, oh, I've got this. But then 3 months later, there's nothing left. So you need some skill with how to create structures that support your goals as a learner too.
Yeah. Also, you can go to a conference or read a book and it all makes sense. And then you try it yourself and it doesn't work, or it doesn't work like you think it should.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, this is a big issue with how students study too. You cram and you sit there and read the same paragraph over and over again, and you think you've got it. Maybe you do for the 24 hours you need it on the test, right? But a really skilled learner makes the, you know, stops, closes the book, and writes down what they need to know to test to see if they've got it, instead of just, you know, reading the passage one more time. And it's things like that that I think are opportunities to improve how we learn.
So Dan, what's an example of when self-directed learning has been really powerful for your success?
You know, a really physical kind of tangible example for me was my journey to learn to be a public speaker. You know, as a CEO, you get to a certain point where you're like the chief storyteller, and it's maybe one of the most important things that you learn to do. And I recognized that. I think it was probably an employee and maybe year three or year four of M5 that came up to me and said, you know, you could be a lot better at that. And I said, okay, how am I going to get better at that? And I went out and found a series of public speaking coaches and a little group of employees. And I just loved the sport of it. I loved realizing that it was one thing to understand what you're going to say. It's another to understand you wanted to pause. And it's another, again, to actually pause.
Yeah. And also, you had the sensibility to listen to your employee when your employee said that and be open to it. And you wanted to improve yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, one of the most powerful things we can do as leaders trying to build learning cultures is to set the example. So we did a couple of programs at work that were experiments to try and kind of foster this learning culture. One of them was to hire the School of Rock to teach people how to play in rock bands. We outfit a few of our conference rooms with instruments, and people who had never played an instrument before got to sign up, take lessons, and then come together in a band, which literally, you know, School of Rock teaches like 7-year-olds and 9-year-olds, which is about the right speed for a company. And at the end of this, we had a big battle of the bands, and you couldn't have done the instrument at all before. I'm a terrible singer, so I decided to do singing, you know, and I think my getting up there and being just awful, not being afraid to be terrible, gave permission to everyone else that this was okay. And I think the lesson resonates as people remember how to play drums or how to play the guitar and do it in front of their colleagues. Remember, oh, you have to practice, and oh, you need a teacher, and oh, learning is a team sport and we're learning to play together. It had really nice implications back to people that were trying to be better software developers and better salespeople and learn those skills. It sort of connected some dots for people. But it starts with the leader not being afraid to be lousy and show that they need help and show that they're learning along with the company.
Yeah. Now, how does your thinking about self-directed learning, particularly for adults, impact the way we've all been taught in school? Because what you've just described sounds like the total opposite of the way I was taught.
Oh, exactly. It's very painful. And I have small kids who are going through the system now. I think a lot of people appreciate the idea, but it's a whole other thing to implement it. Now, again, this is not a new idea. The Maria Montessori played with this, and a lot of people practice, you know, the method in Montessori schools. But when you think about it, having to unlock the industrial complex of tests and assessments and applications for college and requirements and subjects and textbooks, it's very difficult. You know, this a system, I think this is often said, that was designed to produce great workers for assembly lines, right? It's very difficult to create an education program where you can start with the kid's passion and then pack math and writing and other skills underneath. which I think is sort of the holy grail. Very growing homeschool movement trying to do that too, and some schools are trying to do it. But you know, adult learning is a chance with a little bit less of a interlocked assembly line of learning to try things like that. And when somebody stands up and says, I want to be a better public speaker, I want to be a better salesperson, I want to be better at coding in JavaScript, we have chance to build systems now to support them in their goal rather than, you know, feed them a fixed program, fixed curriculum.
Yeah, true. Now, that being said, what I have witnessed for adult learning options, and this is probably just anecdotal in terms of my awareness, it seems to be that there's an explosion of all kinds of offerings, from individual customized engagement that is supposed to teach somebody new skills or improve behavior, to fixed curricula that are offered online or in person. And is there an explosion going on?
Oh yeah, it's awesome. MOOCs are one movement, but just, you know, the explosion of information and different experimentation in the education technology sector, it's amazing. The piece that I thought was missing, though, and, you know, I've talked a little about this, and I think there's a lot of people in your community that think this way. The piece that is yet to be really built well is the social piece. You know, taking a MOOC on your laptop is lonely. And that's one reason why the dropout rates are so high. So what would it take to find a team to learn with? And this is sort of one of the things that we're experimenting with and chasing at Circles Learning Labs. How do you get a team to support a learning goal, a learning lifestyle, the way you might join a Weight Watchers group or AA to support that kind of change in your life?
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the social piece. How do you create it? And the other thing that I would say is, not only is taking a MOOC lonely, but leadership is lonely. Yeah. If you're the top person in your company, chances are you're the only one in that role, and there are things that you are not going to feel comfortable talking about to anybody else.
Well, the sad truth is that it's not only lonely at the top, it's lonely all over the mountain. There are, we keep our jobs for an average of, I think it's two and a half years now, way down. People are more and more freelancing and doing projects. Project teams change in big companies all the time. And there's a set of social structures that make it hard in a lot of companies to really bring your whole self to work. A lot of people are thinking about how we do that better. And it's a shame, because unless the social structure is there, you're less likely to ask for help. You're less likely to share, to give help. And so I think it's important to think about how can we reduce that friction and create people that are more deeply connected so that they can learn together. And, you know, the nice side effect is it makes work better. You're less lonely. You're that deep connection is really valuable, and valuable in cultures, valuable in communities, valuable in reducing employee churn, valuable in producing people with more learning agility, learners. So I think it's an important question.
Right. So given the fact that you've spent a lot of time analyzing and studying this, what structures have you come up with that you think work to support the social piece?
Well, the one that I'm working with and staring at, learning about, is the peer group, small group, mm-hmm. six to eight people meeting regularly with a process and an agenda and a set of norms that force you to go deep with each other, so that the precious time that you spend together is really impactful. And as you open up as people with each other, you start to unveil the problems that you really want to work on, which propels the learning, makes it very relevant and very impactful. So the peer group, which is something that there are more and more of the world. For my own journey, EO and YPO, a Young Presidents Organization, are CEO peer groups, but people are building them in all kinds of communities for all kinds of cohorts. And, you know, it's really a thing that is gaining more and more steam in the world. So I like to talk about this peer group as a, or a guided peer group as a powerful learning structure. We use the term circles.
So let's talk a little bit about what you're doing with Circles Learning Labs and how that fits into your mission of trying to connect the world so people can learn and grow together.
So it starts with finding the right 8 people. And that's a little bit of an online matchmaking problem. But thankfully, we've got incredible amounts of data now that allow us to figure out how to do that better. Then you talk about the meeting time. So we've been building a video experience because video tech is matured enough that it can be reliable and also customized so that you're a part of a very intense guided experience that really goes deep in a short amount of time and makes the most of your time. And then in between regular meetings, figuring out how to take little learning journeys together, could be a course, could be an area you're focusing on building skill in, how to have the more tactical conversations so that people, you know, once you've built these relationships, it's not, hey, does anybody know an employment lawyer to my 1,000 friends on Facebook? It's, hey, does anyone know an employment lawyer to some people that deeply care about my success and are going to answer right away, and their networks become my networks. And so we've been using tools like Slack. Group chat has matured just like video. People are used to it now. So, you know, you get the right people together, you put them in an intense video experience, and you make it easy for them to connect day to day, and you've built a personal advisory board, really, a learning team that's a very powerful and missing structure for a lot of people.
And what kinds of results have you seen from people who've gone through this process?
Tell you a few stories. So we did a circle of high-level heads of human resources at ambitious companies. It started around the election last year and continues to run. One of the themes that came out for this group was how do we lead when employees are in such turmoil about what's going on outside? And I saw this group as leaders share more and more deeply, to the point where it went from this kind of surface political conversation. And by the way, they were able to share memos that they sent out to staff and all kinds of different specific situations that they dealt with tactically, to who are we as leaders around the table in HR? What do we do to show the metrics of the impact of human resources on a culture? What's our role with the CEO? One of the groups had a new CEO. Is HR responsible for onboarding them? How do we best influence our peers in building culture and getting them to be examples? And so it went from sort of set of tactical conversations to a set of deep leadership conversations, and the group continues to hum.
And is this one particular group?
Yeah, one particular group. Actually, HR is an area that we've seen a lot of thirst for connection, and it's another group that can't talk to people at work about some of their biggest problems. So having a confidential place, a circle of peers from outside the company that can share practices is a perfect example. We've seen the same thirst, like I said, all over the mountain, though. New bosses was another example. Small group came together, first-time managers. They hit on a common problem. Hey, we're expected to coach. Well, I don't know how to coach. Do you know how to? I don't know how to coach. I read a good book about coaching once. Why don't we all read it together? And they did that every week, shared one-on-ones with each other so they could get better and better at running their one-on-ones. And we were able actually to get the author of that book that they suggested to each other to come in and join them for a little bit. And, you know, practice, conversation, reflection. You know, the famous John Dewey line, we don't learn from experience, we learn from reflecting on experience. So they became better at that skill they chose to focus on just by getting together and helping each other.
So Dan, speaking of coaches, one of the things that comes to my mind is what appears to be an explosion in the coaching industry. Mm. And you mentioned earlier that you've been part of EO and YPO, which are great communities. And I've had a number of podcast guests who are part of those communities. One of the things that people who are coaches try to, it seems to me, they try to promote is you will improve your knowledge, your skill set, your leadership with coaching. What's your opinion of that, and how might that be different than what you are doing in Circles?
Well, it's interesting. You know, there's some excellent coaches out there and some newer coaches or people doing it for other reasons. I think it's a very frothy market. What I used to like to do is when there was a topic that I wanted to get better at as a company, we would do a company-wide program, perhaps hire a firm as a consultant, but with the goal of learning the topic. An example, that was public speaking. We actually did it for our top 40 leaders at the company. We did it together as a sport. There were public speaking coaches there that were training us and giving us feedback. But then we sort of took it on our own. In fact, they started a Toastmasters chapter at work, and it became an ongoing practice. I think coaching can be very expensive in addition to being a bit hit or miss. So again, if there's a framework that you want to get better at, this idea that you read the book, but that's not enough, read the book, hire the author, hire the consulting firm, do a project, give it 6 months or a year, do it with a group of people, fine. That can really help get you to be better marketers, better bosses. We did it with the crew that wrote Multipliers. We did it with Pat Lencioni on Teams. You know, get the thought leader directly engaged. Vern Harnish's crew, founder of EO, you know, in implementing a set of specific tools and frameworks that they help you learn to is great. But the funny thing about, you know, a one-on-one business coach is, as I said, expensive, hit or miss, and can be inefficient. I would urge people to consider the peer group as an alternative structure where you're getting seven coaches and mentors and giving. You know, teaching is one of the best ways to learn too, and a lot of us have that to offer. That's a structure that may be an interesting substitute in some cases for coaching.
Sounds great. Dan, what do you think really successful leaders are doing to get help that others don't do?
Look, I think they all have peer groups. I really do. Whether it's Buffett and Gates playing bridge or people in YPO or, you know, there's some very elite peer groups. I think it's more and more and more common that, you know, people realize they need to think out loud. They need to think with quality people. You know, Tim Ferriss has this line that he repeats a lot about you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. I think being deliberate about that is something that a lot of top leaders do. And I would add to that, that people more and more value diversity in those relationships, diversity of companies, diversity of gender we've seen being hugely powerful in terms of deepening your thinking on a question and the right constitution for a peer group. Diversity globally as we approach global problems, more and more possible with video. Diversity of ages as we think about the understanding generational shifts in work and among customers and markets. So, you know, I think getting very deep with a few people, instead of pretending that Facebook or LinkedIn is your network or that stack of business cards that you have is your network. It's not. It's a few people that you really invest in, and being deliberate about that and having a practice for giving and getting help with them is something that I've seen my, you know, CEOs and leaders that I admire have as a regular practice.
Yeah. And I mean, the fact is most of us have a handful of people who are our go-to people at any given point in time anyway. So why not formalize it?
Yeah, I want to just be deliberate about it. You know, there's certain things that you can't discuss with your college buddies, you know, I don't want to. There's certain things that you can't discuss with your work buddies, right? So it's very helpful to have a mastermind or a forum or a space where you can explore where personal and professional meet, which is a lot of the challenge of leadership.
It sure is. Dan, whom do you know personally who has been really successful at Smashing Plateaus?
You know, anyone who's been successful has been successful at Smashing Plateaus, and for sure. I mean, it's such an important concept. I, you know, a friend that's on my mind today is Rebecca Traikman, who won Best Director last night at the Tonys. And I had a privilege to work with Rebecca in a fellowship at Aspen and watch her over years really just do the work and sometimes think, gosh, is this going anywhere? And you know, the play Indecent that won last night was something that she had been working on for decades, you know? And so I think it was just a real testament to persistence and of course talent and all the other amazing things that Rebecca is, but it was just such a moment last night for her and her circle of friends to see her breakthrough and take that award on stage.
Right. And you're also sharing an important message, which is that breakthroughs don't happen overnight. We notice about them overnight, but they don't happen overnight.
Right? We can't tell when we're learning. It always feels like a plateau. And then one day I had that learning Spanish in Spain, you know, flashcards, flashcards, flashcards. I'm like, if there's anything sticking, I can't tell. And then one day after, you know, two gin tonics, you're sitting in a bar realizing you're having a conversation. Wow, when did that happen? You know, two years to have an overnight success.
Exactly, exactly. Dan, what's coming up in the near future for you?
Exciting to be launching this company. We're working with a lot of exciting community leaders and corporations to ask this question. Can we be deliberate about creating circles? Can we use technology to make it easy? And what happens when we do? So I feel like I'm so grateful I took the time to think and plan and put myself in the situation where I love the questions, don't have all the answers, but I'm working with people that care about the same things and hopefully making a contribution.
So great. Well, Dan, how can listeners learn more about you and follow you?
We have a website, which is www.circles.es, and that changes every day. You can reach me at dan@circles. I'm happy to talk to people who are interested in the same things as we figure out this movement and this community. So those are two good places.
It's great. Well, Dan, thanks so much for coming on Smashing the Plateau today. It's been a really rich discussion about how we can improve ourselves through learning, how we can create a world where people are connected so deeply with learning and growing together. My guest today has been Dan Hoffman, the CEO of Circle Learning Labs. Thanks again, Dan, for joining us.
My pleasure, David. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.